This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In the early afternoon of January 6th, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal was in the gallery of the House of Representatives. She was watching the effort by Republicans to block certification of Joe Biden's Electoral College victory.
I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
She was there in the gallery because COVID restrictions limit the number of representatives that can be on the floor at any one time. And so it was from up there that she saw all hell break loose. Jayapal represents Seattle, Washington, and is the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. She's also our guest on the show today. She was supposed to be our guest for last week's episode, which was going to be about the path from here to eventual passage of Medicare for All. Instead, we posted a rather unplanned episode called Inside the Insurrection, which you should go back and listen to if you haven't. Jayapal, like reporter Matt Fuller in our last episode, made it from the gallery to a secure area to wait out the assault. And while the room proved in the end to be secure from violence, it wasn't safe from maskless Republicans or from COVID.
Three Democratic members of Congress have now tested positive for COVID-19 after being confined in the same room for hours alongside Republican members of Congress who refused their requests, even in that room, to put on masks. Congressman Brad Schneider of Illinois, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington, who's the chair of the Progressive Caucus, Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman, who's 75 years old.
Jayapal put out a statement saying this: many Republicans still refused to take the bare minimum COVID-19 precaution and simply wear a damn mask in a crowded room during a pandemic, creating a super spreader event on top of a domestic terrorist attack. She also called it, quote, selfish idiocy.
But she agreed to join us today anyway to discuss the events of last Wednesday, how she is handling her diagnosis and hopeful recovery, and what all of this means for the progressive agenda over the next few weeks and months.
Hey there.
Hey, Congresswoman Jayapal, how are you?
I am okay. How are you?
Better than you. I mean, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better today. The first 3 days were kind of rough, but I definitely started feeling better this morning. So the fever's gone, the chills are gone. Now it's just like a big stuffy head, you know, sort of more like a regular cold.
Mm-hmm. Right. I gather you had tested negative right before this.
That's right. I got tested on Tuesday afternoon and I tested negative that night. I got the result. And I had also tested negative 5 days before that because I had gotten tested before I flew into DC, and that test was also negative. So I've regularly been testing negative until I went to the super spreader event that I was forced into.
Can you walk us through Wednesday morning to the moment you saw those rioters trying to smash their way onto the House floor?
Well, I got to the Capitol early at 8:45 because we had been told that there would be what was being described to us as protests at that time.
As Congress gets ready to certify President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the Electoral College today, Washington, D.C. is bracing for massive protests.
But also, we understood that there was a regular, you know, it was not a regular event, that there were real security threats because we were being asked to get there several hours before the proceedings were to start, and we had been told to be on alert by Capitol Police.
The National Guard has been deployed as President Trump is expected to address a rally of his supporters later on today.
And so when I got to the chamber just before 1:00, there were limited numbers of people who were allowed on the main floor of the House and then in the gallery, just one level above because of COVID. And so I was one of the people that was allowed into the gallery. So I was sitting there with maybe a dozen other members, and At 1:25, my chief sent me a text saying, evacuating Cannon. We were all getting the messages on social media in the minutes before that. And we didn't understand why nobody was reacting, because it seemed like there was an enormous mob outside. Mm-hmm. And yet we were still there. But, you know, we had this strange, now what I realize is misplaced faith that we were going to be safe. You know, at 1:28, mm-hmm. I texted my husband and said, this is seriously crazy. Police have been breached. Chaos is going to break out, and violence too.
There's an armed standoff at the house front door. Police officers have their guns drawn. Hopefully this gets resolved peacefully, but police are overrun by these protesters and asked for reinforcements to deal with this situation that is escalating and going out of control here, guys.
That was at 1:28. He, you know, asked me if I should come back to the mm-hmm. office. He said, maybe you should just come back to the office right now. But I had had knee surgery and the trains weren't running between the Capitol and the other buildings. And so the idea of like trying mm-hmm. to make my way back to the office didn't seem safe either. And so I said, no, I'm in the safest place I could possibly be. I'm with right. the Speaker of the House. I'm on the House floor, mm-hmm. you know, the House gallery. And of course, there's going to be lots of Capitol Police that are going to prevent any harm from coming to us. And that, of course, turned out to not be true at all. And so it was 2:17 when they locked us in, and they had just taken out Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Hoyer. And, you know, our alarm bells were ringing. At some point before that, Abigail Spanberger showed me a picture of Flexicuff Man in the Senate. So right. that had already happened.
Eric Munchell of Tennessee, who law enforcement officials say appears to be the man here carrying plastic restraints, prompting questions about whether they intended to take hostages.
Nancy and Steny at 2:17. At 2:18, I texted, they are on the steps of the Capitol. And at 2:19, I said, we're recessing, but we can't leave. And at 2:21, I said the Capitol has been breached. So it was just all happening so fast, and we could hear all of the noise because the gallery is quite shallow. You know, it's maybe 10 to 15 feet at the most from mm-hmm. the banister that overlooks the House floor to the doors that go directly out into the corridor. And there were rioters starting to pound on the door. We were told to move for some reason. And because of my knee surgery, I had a right. cane. And so I was completely focused on how am I going to get under the banisters with this cane, with a knee I can't bend.
Right.
There is absolute chaos right now. The United States Capitol building has been breached. We heard from lawmakers who were initially in lockdown and then being told to put on gas masks, trying to get out of the Capitol building.
Did you think they were going to get in?
I really did, because by the time we were down on the floor, there were people banging on the doors. And unlike the main floor of the chamber, not only were we very close, but there's no movable furniture there. They're all seats that are mm-hmm. nailed in. And so all we had between us and the rioters were, and we didn't know if they were armed, or, you know, we didn't know who they were, was a few Capitol mm-hmm. Police officers. But they seemed somewhat confused themselves. They were yelling to each other about who has the key before they were able to close all the doors. And they didn't really seem to be in communication with anyone else. And so we just had no idea if anyone was going to know that we were there and come and get us. All the other members had been taken off the main floor of the chamber by then, and we were still stuck there. And so, yes, there was a very real fear that these people who were pounding on the doors, maybe just 15 feet from us, were going to get in and that we would not make it out.
How did you make it out?
Well, at some point after they started pounding and the Capitol Police officers were saying, identify yourselves, because we weren't sure how we were ever going to know it was safe to go out. Somebody must have identified himself as a Capitol Police officer, and they opened the doors. And then they ushered us out, and we were right near the big staircase going downstairs. And just on the other side of the staircase, so maybe 5 feet away from us, were these rioters, insurrectionists, I don't know what we want to call them, down on the floor, about five of them maybe, down on the floor, spread-eagled on their bellies with their hands over their heads, and Capitol Police officers around them, guns drawn on them.
Right.
And those were the people that had been trying to get in to the into where we were. We were just told to go down. There was no police officer with us. There was nobody with us, nobody telling us where to go other than go down the steps. And I know for me, you know, the big thing for me was I can't do steps. I haven't been doing steps with my knee. And so Mikey Sherrill saw that and saw me with my cane and said, "Do you want help? I can stand on your other side." And I said, "Yeah," and just took a giant deep breath and then basically tried to cantilever myself down with, you know, one hand on the railing, one hand on Mikey, and using my right leg as much as I could to go down what I think was about six flights of stairs to go down into the sub basement where the tunnel is to the other buildings. But we got into the tunnel. There was still no Capitol Police officers with us. So we were just told to go to one of the other buildings that was supposed to be a secure location. So we started to head in that direction and went through the tunnel. Nobody guiding us, nobody looking out for our safety. And then we saw some Capitol Police coming the other direction, and they told us which room to go to, which was a different room than we had originally been told. And we, you know, eventually made our way there. And by the time we got there, I think we were among the last people to enter the room because it was packed. And the minute I walked in there, I thought, I'm going to get COVID. There's just no way. This is a super spreader event. There were over 100 people there, but there was no, you know, there were no choices in that moment. So that's what we did.
When you were on the gallery and the people were banging on the door, were people looking around for weapons they could use to defend themselves? Was your cane kind of identified
as well? Yes, I definitely. I identified my cane. I mean, I had it. The challenge was I was holding a gas mask in my right hand, but I had my cane in my left hand. It was sort of propped on my leg. The gas mask was another weapon potentially because it's actually very heavy. And so I sort of figured that between the gas mask and the cane, and I'm right-handed, that I would start by, you know, flinging the gas mask, and then I would be able to pick up the cane with my right hand and, you know, use the cane. But I mean, these are all split second thoughts that were going through my head. Like, what are we going to do?
So you were going to go down swinging.
Oh, for sure.
So you found yourself in this committee room packed, and this is the area that has since become famous for a lot of Republicans refusing to wear masks. Did you try to get as far away as you could? What was your move in there? And did people think that you were safe yet, or were you still curious if there would be a breach at that location?
Oh no, I don't think any of us knew we were safe. And there was one point at which somebody was live streaming with press from that room, which there was an announcement immediately to stop doing that because you can tell from the surroundings, the background, which room it is, if somebody knows the Capitol.
Right.
So there was definitely fear that we still weren't safe. And my first thought was, I have to sit down. I mean, my knee was killing me. It was probably five times as big as it should have been. And so I went and found a place that was as distant from other people as possible, but a chair. And it was, you know, behind the first row at the end.
Right.
The rows are where the members sit, you know, was a hearing room. So I was on the lowest level near the end, where I figured at least there was nobody right next to me. And, you know, elevating my leg and asking if anybody had a cold pack or ice that I could put on it. And somebody got me some ice. And then I was just sitting there with my leg elevated and hoping nobody came close to talk to me. But, you know, it's just not possible to stay really far apart.
Right.
So I was better than some of the other members who were still trying to process and talking to each other and milling about each other because there wasn't any room to not do that. You know, in some ways I was probably more distanced than other people were just because I couldn't move.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. With Mint Mobile, you save money and get quality service. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/deconstructed. That's mintmobile.com/deconstructed. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/deconstructed. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabyte on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
And so coincidentally, while all of this was going on, the press declares that John Ossoff has won in Georgia.
Yes.
You know, which flips control of the Senate to Democrats. And so combining his win and Democrats taking the Senate with this insurrection that was repelled, how has that kind of changed Democrats psychologically and in terms of their like political calculations about how aggressive they're going to be with their agenda going forward? Or is it wrong to kind of link the two?
No, I definitely think that we're not very good as a progressive movement in general about celebrating our victories. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there was this, like, when we win Georgia, we're all really going to celebrate. And I even remember thinking, we're going to win Georgia in the midst of them challenging the Electoral College vote. Mm-hmm. And how sweet is that going to be to both win the Senate and defeat them on the Electoral College vote and certify Joe Biden as the next president? Of course, we just didn't get to do that in real time. So there was celebration about Georgia in that room. There were, you know, we were talking to each other about, I mean, it was both Republicans and Democrats, but with Democrats, we were talking to each other about just trying to hang on to every piece of good news. And it was significant, obviously. And so there was that. And then there was also, I think, in the days since January 6th, there has been an enormous amount of unity about the threat that faces us from these people who are really unhinged. I mean, refusing to wear masks and also refusing to go through metal detectors, and then continuing, worst of all, continuing to support these insurrectionists and calling them loyal patriots. And then, of course, all the reports that show that some of them were likely involved in planning and executing the attack, mm-hmm. including yours was the first piece I saw mm-hmm. with that clearly reported. And so I think that all of that, you could see the effect of all of that in how quickly we moved to impeachment.
Right.
There was not the resistance to it this time. There was a little bit of initial a couple of members, but even, you know, people who had been very reticent the first time around were just clear, this has to happen. We have to do this. And I also think that this will take some time to figure out, but I do think that there's a different sensibility about racism. And it was so clearly on display. Mm-hmm. What we had seen during the summer that I pointed out to Bill Barr about, you know, mm-hmm. these white nationalists, armed militia storming the state capitol in Michigan, which I believe was a precursor to this. I mean, I think those were trial runs. And then the way that law enforcement treated them, as in ignored that whole thing and acted like there was nothing there. Bill Barr told me he didn't even know, which I don't believe is true, but that's what he said. And then, of course, the way that Black Lives Matter individuals who were demanding justice at the murder of yet another Black person at the hands of law enforcement during the summer. And those people were tear gassed and pepper sprayed and National Guard troops lined up everywhere. And then this, where this wasn't even taken seriously as a threat, in spite of all the things that we now know existed prior to January 6th, that somehow, because these were white nationalists, Proud Boys, Boogaloo Boys, people who Chris Wray identified to us in Judiciary Committee during a hearing a year ago, were the single biggest domestic terror threat to the United States for these white nationalist groups. And yet they weren't identified as a serious threat. There was no additional law enforcement there. Now we're finding out more about National Guard not being called in, National Guard being delayed, all the different ways in which the intelligence was not shared or assessed. Who knows which pieces of these are going to be true in the end, but they were not taken seriously. And so I do think that there's a different understanding of race, and some of the calls that I have been on, some of which are to process what happened. I created a text string called the gallery group that is everybody that was in the gallery, and we've been processing with each other, and it's been pretty intense, both in person and on text. And I think that there is a different understanding of race. And for those of us who were people of color, several of us, when we were told to take off our member pins so that the insurrectionists couldn't identify us, we actually had to make a choice about whether we wanted to do that or keep them on, because we weren't sure that Capitol Police would identify us as members if we took them off. So I kept mine on. Mondaire Jones kept his on.
Right.
And I think that there has been discussion about that among us as members, not just progressives. I mean, this gallery group has people from across the caucus, Blue Dogs, frontliners, and others.
The other element of the next few weeks will be the stimulus. Joe Biden on Thursday night is going to unveil, you know, what he's pushing for. Your Medicare for All co-sponsor on the Senate side, Bernie Sanders, has been pushing him to include significant elements of Medicare for All in that push, so similar to what you were calling for the last time that we spoke. You know, how likely do you think it is? Like, how much leverage do you think you have at this point to be able to get some of those elements? I think he's lowering the Medicare age, raising it, like people 25 and under, and also for people who are unemployed to be able to get into some type of insurance, whether it's TRICARE or Medicare or something else.
Well, I do believe that the crisis moment that we're in has just been elevated multiple times now. And I think that our narrow majorities in the House and the Senate mean that, of course, you know, it's challenging, but there is budget reconciliation in the Senate that can be used for a relief package. Those things have to be budget related, but we also got the PAYGO exemptions, which are more important now than ever before. So that things related to the pandemic, including healthcare, do not have to go through the PAYGO point of order. And so I think that the reality of the crisis is maybe even more enormous. I mean, I understand that, you know, what we faced was an insurrection, but I still think that the need to get relief to people and the need to sort of show that somebody's in charge and they're going to get relief is more important than ever. And so I hope that the fact that we won Georgia, the fact that Black and Brown and Indigenous folks won Georgia for us, and, you know, and the reality of now controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency, that has to be enough to say to Joe Biden, but to all of our Democrats, including some of our conservative Democrats, now we have to deliver. We have to deliver. And we have to show people that we've got their backs. And of course, there's the midterm elections looming in 2 years, but we have to show that we can deliver real relief to people across the economic, working people's economic spectrum, I should say, poor people and working people's economic spectrum. And so, you know, we're going to use every tool in our toolbox to do that. And we obviously got through some of the procedural reforms that we need in the House to be able to do that. But we're also going to have to work really closely together with Democrats in the Senate. I was just on an inside-outside strategy call with Bernie and our movement partners. And then also with our leadership and across the caucus. And some of the unity that has been building across the caucus with different parts of the caucus that perhaps never would be in this situation otherwise, sharing, you know, very personal things. I hope that helps us to really come together as Democrats and maybe a good few Republicans, I don't know, but at least as Democrats, to really push for the boldest relief we can get. That is our job, and we have to get that done.
And the other thing you and I talked about last time was that the CPC has the most leverage in situations where you're not going to get any Republican support. And you can hope, but I would suspect that on a Biden stimulus, you know, you're likely to get pretty much universal opposition. They'll find things in it that they say that's just a bridge too far. We'd love to bring relief to people, but we can't do X, Y, Z, you know, whatever thing is in it that they don't like. Do you think that'll be one of these moments of leverage? Or do you think that they're going to be able to kind of railroad you guys by saying, you know, if you don't vote for this, then people get nothing?
I think that is a real challenge. Because you saw what happened on the last COVID relief package. I mean, there was a group, bipartisan group of conservative Democrats and more liberal Republicans that got together and were crafting the scope of that package. And that could happen again, because I do think that there are a lot of people who believe we need to get serious COVID relief done. But my fear is that that group will hold sway on getting something through the Senate. Now, with 51 votes, and if we can use budget reconciliation,
right,
that gives us the ability to not need Republicans. So it really depends on if it's a pure budget reconciliation piece, where I think we can get a lot of stuff done. But some of the things we want to do, you know, let's just say around immigration and offering green cards to frontline workers, or, you know, those kinds of things, we're going to have to figure out what we can get through by budget reconciliation, which would only allow 51 votes, versus things that will require a 60-vote majority in the Senate.
Great. Well, Pramila Jayapal, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck on your recovery. I know there can be a yo-yo effect, but I hope that you're headed out of the woods on this.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I hope so, too. I'm not going to let this virus stop me, but I know the reality of the course of it, and we just have to wait and see, but hopefully all will be good. You know, the doctor called me this morning to say, I'm so glad you're doing better, but please know day seven is the real day. Day seven, eight, and nine is often where people get much worse. So I'm on day, just in the middle of day five, at the beginning of day five. So I got a few more days to make sure I get through this, but hopefully the fact that I don't have terrible symptoms now is a good sign. And we don't know what the long-term effects of these things are, even if you get through it, you know. Anyway, to that point, I should go rest.
Yes, you should. Yes, you should.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Good to talk to you.
Same to you.
That was Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, and that's our show. Deconstructed is a production of First Look Media and The Intercept. Our producer is Zach Young. The show was mixed by Brian Pugh. Our theme music was composed by Bart Warshaw. Betsy Reed is The Intercept's editor-in-chief. And I'm Ryan Grimm, D.C. Bureau Chief of The Intercept. If you'd like to support our work, go to theintercept.com/give. Your donation, no matter what the amount, makes a real difference. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show so you can hear it every week. If you're subscribed already, please do leave us a rating or review. It helps people find the show. And if you want to give us feedback, email us at podcasts@theintercept.com. Thanks so much. See you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.